This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Lefty Pinkos is here to celebrate all things queer and decidedly left of centre.
We took the children from their mothers.
For the pain of these stolen generations, we say sorry.
Each week we'll aim a non-mainstream spotlight to our community and get gritty with all kinds of titillating queer folk.
From artists, activists, freaks, and generally wayward but passionate peeps.
Refugees are welcome here!
News, and music too.
Hosted by Brian and Kat.
We're back. It's another week of Lefty Pinkos.
That's right. But thanks to Kiriakis Gold for the Gold and the Beautiful. He had a great show then. It's always nice to have a bit of crossover in the studios with the lad, because we thought we were lucky with Dean Beck. But no, we've got it good with Kiriakis Gold here on Joy 94.9. But this next hour is Lefty Pinkos. Hey, Kath.
Yes, that's right. It's our regular show where we grab a guest from somewhere who's special in some way or in many different ways. And this week is no exception to that.
Too right.
We were really lucky. We caught up with Kamahi Jordan King as he flew through Melbourne. And this is a bit of a break from our usual Lefty Pinkos fare in that we couldn't get Kamahi for Tonight Live, so we went to him. And we caught up with Kamahi as he drifted through Melbourne on his way to Sydney to be in a performance up there. So coming over the next hour, we're going to have sort of, you know, the special best bits of that interview
with Kamahi. Yeah. Just to give you a bit of an insight, Kamahi's an Aboriginal man from Katherine. He's a Gurindji man from Katherine and from Northern Territory. And you may know him as the drag, or actually, I can't say drag.
No, we're about to find out. We can't call him a drag queen. But
Constantina Bush is one of his alter egos. But he's also an actor, a singer, a burlesque performer, and
a visual artist.
A visual artist as well.
He's one of those really multi-skilled sort of people.
He is, and so we had a bit of a chat to him at the Blackman Hotel, but
About that in a moment.
I mean, you keep cutting me off, Kath, so I don't know what to say. But anyway, we'll be back.
Hi, I'm Nan McGregor, and you're on Joy 94.9.
That's right, you're on Joy 94.9. It's Brian and Kath here with Lefty Pinkos. And earlier we mentioned that we've got a special guest in that's actually a pre-record. We went and caught up with him at his motel room, the Blackman Motel, which is like this arts
weird, didn't
series.
It,
yeah, like exactly. Catch up with this Aboriginal guy at the Blackman Motel.
Yeah.
But Kamahi Jordan King is our special guest on Lefty Pinkos this week, and he is a visual artist, he's a burlesque performer, an actor, a singer. What he was doing in town was he was working with the Malthouse, basically on their Shadow King play that was presented as part of last year's Melbourne International Arts Festival. They were rehearsing to get it remounted and presented up at the Sydney Festival before they take off over to Perth to present it at their festival in the West.
So, and hopefully onwards from there.
Yeah, I guess basically we asked, you know, Kamahi to start off with, why were you at the Blackman Hotel? And this is what he had to say.
Well, this is where the Malthouse put us up. A long time ago, we had an incident with taxis at the Malthouse.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, the publicity we generated for the taxis not picking us up, the Blackman Hotel rang the Malthouse and said, hey, guys, is there anything we can do to help? And from that, they negotiated and they got deals for all of their black actors to come down and we stay in this hotel here.
What I like most, it's called the Blackman Hotel. How's that feel for you?
Why are we putting in a typecast accommodation now? But no, it's not. I like it. Like, it's there's three hotels, and they call them the Art Series Hotels. And this is Charles Blackman's work, and it's basically his interpretation of Alice in Wonderland. If you look around the room, everything, like, these are his daughters. That's one of his daughters, you know, skipping, and it's strange.
It's larger than life, actually, because the portraits are quite big. Now, as I cast my eyes around the room, I also see one of your works, Kamahi. And can you just tell us a bit, for people that don't know you, and if you don't, you should, can you give us a bit of a history of who you are and what you do?
Okay. Well, I'm an artist, and I'd like to say in all aspects of the word artist, I studied acting, so a performing artist. I did start studying fine arts in Perth, but I stopped that and decided to concentrate on acting. But I still paint, and my paintings sell, and they sell quite regularly and quite well, actually. So I've done that, and I've moved from like the traditional style painting into abstract contemporary. But everything for me is like connected to earth, to nature. So all of my works, even though they're not, you know, like the traditional Aboriginal paintings, what you'd expect to see, they still encompass my identity and my, I guess, culture and spirituality.
And you've got, I guess, you've got your visual arts, you've got your performance. There's also your character, Constantina Bush, which many within our queer community might know as somebody that hits stages to, I guess, as a character. And you've got a thing about not calling her a drag character. Do you want to maybe explain why you don't like the term drag when you're a man getting dressed up as a woman, and why is it you want to differentiate yourself from drag?
Well, because when I first started going out here in Melbourne, I met, you know, drag queens like Anita Beer, who I just love absolutely to death, Monty. I'd see what they did to become these drag queens that went out to these nightclubs and that. And for me, to call Constantina a drag queen is actually, I believe, an offence to them, because the way Constantina is, she doesn't go all extravagant with her hair or her makeup. She's a girl from the bush, and she's a character that I've based on my family members, you know, some of them. And, like, the stories that I tell in my show are true. Mm. So, like, they really happened to somebody in my family, or, you know, like, people laugh at them and that, but it's really how we are. And in that context, the way we are so simple, and we call it mild. And when Constantina comes out, she's very mild. She doesn't go all out. Sometimes she'll have fingernails, sometimes she won't, and she'll have hair on her arms or whatever, hair on her back. And don't worry, the women up there really do anyway. So, but so for me, I think the art of drag is just too much. It's such a creative thing. Like, even when I auditioned for you to be a drag queen, I didn't get the miming down. It's an art, and it's something that I can't do. So Not in saying Constantina's less than a drag queen, but I prefer that she's a real character from the bush, you know, my family. And out of respect to them, I want her to be a real character. So whenever people, you know, publish photos of her and that, they just write "and performer Constantina Bush" or "songbird Constantina Bush" or, you know, and it was really nice because one day I opened up the Courier Mail and there it was a photo of me and a photo of a black drag queen. I think it was Destiny Has Arrived.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They said, "Drag Queen, Destiny Has Arrived," and "Songbird, Constantina Bush," or whatever.
Oh, wow,
so
cool.
It was like people are getting it now. And it's like, it's kind of a never-ending battle because people just want to say, "Oh, you're a man in a dress, so it's drag." Mm-hmm. And for me, it's more about performance art, encapsulating my family and being true to them as well. And like her, you know, her mild accent, from that down to the way she's still quite a snazzy woman, mm-hmm. but she's a little bit like she could be polished, but she's not, and that's just the way she is.
Joy 94.9.
You're with Lefty Pinkos, about 8:15.
And tonight on Lefty Pinkos, we did a special pre-record with a man from Katherine, hailing from Katherine, Kamahi Jordan King from the Northern Territory. It's been quite interesting listening back in to his words, isn't it, Kath?
Yeah, and he's one of those guys who travels around Australia doing all sorts of different jobs. It's, you know, he's got that sort of life, really. And one of the things that Kamahi is very well known for in Melbourne is not just creating the character of Constantina Bush, but also the way he adapts from various bits of material to become this sort of black presentation. And mm-hmm. similarly, in the show he's just flown off to Sydney today for,
he's the fool
in The Shadow King.
Yeah, and The Shadow King's like an adaptation of Shakespeare's ultimate tragedy, King Lear.
Mm.
And actually, you'd experienced before, I did, didn't you, Kath? Like, and you said it's a tragedy, it's crazy, the fool is an amazing character. Mm. And then I trundled along to the Malt House to check it out, and I was blown away because, I mean, I don't particularly like tragedies and depression and all that kind of stuff, but they just served it up. I mean, it was just like this phenomenal production, basically, and about blackfellas doing Shakespeare, which was amazing. And Kamahi played the fool, didn't he?
And I remember you being really devastated by the whole production and sort of speechless. So in here, Kamahi talks a bit about how material is adapted. Let's hear.
Yeah, so for me, singing live, changing the words to current songs to be more Aboriginal friendly in Creole, it kind of gives the, not vibe, I'd say, it sets the foundation for the show and for Constantina. And yeah, so she's very different and she's a real character to me. Like even, it was funny, the other day, Michael, the director of the play that I'm down here rehearsing, The Shadow King, he said, oh, what did you get up to on New Year's? And for the life of me, I could not remember. I said, you know what, I've had a blank, I can't remember. And then I actually realised the reason I'm forgetting is because Constantina Bush did a gig on New Year's Eve and it's her memory, it's not mine. Like, so when I, you know, dress up as Constantina, it's not just about, oh, here I am, I've got to remember this and remember that. It's about her, and it's about her having her own memories, her own personality, so she can become this real kind of person, like this alter ego that I have. Not like split personality crazy, but it kind of makes me think, you know, I have to talk about her in the third person, because if I don't, I start to become confused. So for me, it's about, you know, building her up. She's sort of surpassed me now. But what's happening is, like, since I've done The Shadow King, I've had a few good reviews and that, and now people are starting to ring up for me, and it's kind of strange because I've just been, you know, passing the torch to her all the time.
Yeah, because she's been in existence for 6 years now, I guess. What's her journey been like, I guess, to watch as Kamahi?
I think, like, it has been interesting because, like, really, at some level, it's me behind her. But if I was to get up and sing those songs, just me, it's not funny. It wouldn't be a show. It'd be like a karaoke performance. Whereas when it's Constantina, she has her personality that goes with it, and she does get away with things that I wouldn't even think about trying to. She has a freedom that I give myself to allow her to become this character. And the things that she can do with the audience, like, you know, get across quite political points, but make them funny and comedic, and the audience actually go away and they listen, you know, like I have people writing on her Facebook page, you know, I really enjoyed your show, and I didn't realize how political it was. You got me really thinking about things now and Aboriginal issues, and well done, you did it in such a way, like I used to close off, and like they're quite honest in that, and it kind of makes me realize that she's a good vehicle for me. So the journey of Constantina Bush, I guess a highlight is now she's being asked to do national level things. We started to get a few corporate gigs, which pay ridiculous amounts of money. I'm thinking about allowing her to do like a cultural awareness for like corporations and stuff, like, and go in and, you know, like, all right, sit down now.
Is this thing on?
yeah, like just crazy. Make it fun, but actually have really, really real facts and things in there that, you know, people need to be aware about when dealing with Aboriginal people.
No, you got two prongs to your identity, I guess, that kind of that could promote good understanding or cultural awareness, like whether it's queer stuff or whether it's your Aboriginality. Like, you've got those two prongs that she does illuminate and highlight, but in that mild way that does. You know, I guess when you watch Constantina, it's like this. She breaks down boundaries on so many levels, and her part of her charm, which is that kind of. Yeah, like you don't.
It's kind of innocence,
yeah, exactly.
But it's both.
Yeah.
Just for people who don't know, could you talk a bit about where you and Constantina come from in Australia?
Okay, yeah. I'm born in Katherine Northern Territory. Constantina Bush is born just out of there. We grew up in the bush just out of Katherine, and my father used to drive graders after the wet season because, you know, how you got four seasons down here, well, we only have two. Wet and dry, and they're both hot. And we used to live in the middle of nowhere while Dad was working on the road. So, like, you'd have community, you'd have the turnoff on the Stuart Highway, and we'd be, like, somewhere, like, 150 kilometres in.
Wow.
You know, just fixing the roads after the wet season, because the wet season, the mud, it turns into mud and it just gets dug up by all the big heavy trucks going through or whatever. So his job was to just skim the surface and make it nice and smooth again, I guess, when the dry came. And so we grew up kind of out bush, Roper River a lot, which is where it had a very, very strong missionary influence, like Christianity, and a lot of the kids have got biblical names. Grew up in Katherine, the town itself. But when I was 12, I was sent away to boarding school. So
Whereabouts? Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a long way.
It is a long way, but I had my three older brothers down there.
Can you talk a bit about in Australia, you know, as you guys would know, there's that kind, it can be a sort of like a racist or so it's an unfortunate debate that can happen around city-dwelling Aboriginal people and sort of, you know, outlying or regional Aboriginal people. Now, you're one of those people that kind of is in both worlds. How do you see that debate? It's almost like this debate that only outlying or, you know, regional Aboriginal people have got the right to talk on certain levels and only city people on other levels, and there's like this divide, but you're not a divide. What does it feel like?
Well, there is a big difference. Like, you do have to switch into two modes when you go, like, where I'm from, my people are a majority. So, you know, we actually walk around and we look where we're going and we have the right to be there and we feel that as well. Whereas I've noticed in the city, it's a different thing. We're a minority. You have to really look for your people. And when you do, you find them in little places and they're always getting harassed by the police and moved on or whatever. And they're starting to introduce things like that up in Katherine now because, like, they've taken the seats out in the medium strips in the middle of town. They keep the sprinklers on all night so that no black police can lie down and sleep there. But, like, for the local Aboriginal mob, they're sort of getting annoyed because they get tagged as well. And it's actually all the itinerants, we call them, because they come in from communities. They don't have anywhere to live. So they come in, they drink, and they just walk around and that, and it's giving the locals a bad name. You know, they're sort of getting jack of it now as well with the way that they're treated by the police and stuff. For me, like, the reality of the sort of life that I live up there, the racism is so rife that about 4 or 5 months ago, my cousin, Styles King, was killed by a bouncer in a nightclub. He choked him to death. And about 6 months prior, or a year prior to that, this police officer was hassling this guy, off-duty police officer was hassling a black guy in Katherine. The black guy punched him once. He fell down, hit his head, and he died later of complications. And now that black guy is in jail. The guy that killed my cousin is working at the local golf club as security again. Like, it's ridiculous. That's the sort of stuff that we have to put up with up there. And then when you come to the city, I actually don't get hassled by police much myself at all. And when I do get pulled over and that, I just flirt a little bit, and believe it or not, it goes a long way, male or female. It does, like, yeah.
Constantine came out when the intervention was imposed and the Northern Territory emerged a response where Aboriginal communities were, I guess, governed under a new set of laws, different to any other peoples within Australia. What's the difference of pre-intervention and post-intervention that you can see within your community in Katherine?
Well, believe it or not, pre-intervention, the way of life was more smoother. People didn't feel the need to run away from their communities because they were so governed and they stayed there. And now what's happened is everyone's running into town for alcohol because nothing can be taken out there. As far as we, you know, we who live up there with this, we see the racism, you know, imposed. And now I guess the basics card is probably the main thing. Like, you know, what does it do to somebody to walk into a shop and hand that over as opposed to just having their own money in their key card? Like, yeah, there's an element of pride that's stripped away.
The perfect mix of music, news and interviews. Joy 94.9.
That's a good note to end on. You're with Lefty Pinkos here on Joy, of course. Kath and Brian with you.
And we're chatting to Kamahi Jordan King in a special first ever pre-record for Lefty Pinkos. We've never actually been off-site out of the studios, and we nabbed Kamahi Jordan King before he took off to Sydney just today. He couldn't come in this afternoon or tonight. So we did a pre-record with him and had a wonderful time with him down at the John, is it the John Blackman or the Peter Black?
I thought it was just the Blackman.
The Blackman. It's this art series motel down in Mel. Oh, there's a series.
St Kilda Road, it
around
was.
The place. And yeah. St Kilda Road. And it was like being in Alice in Wonderland, and they had all that kind of Blackman artwork from his, he actually presented it at the NGV a few years back.
Yeah.
Yeah, fascinating little place, fascinating little chat, fascinating interview. So,
can I ask you something? Back in an earlier part of the interview, Kamahi refers to him auditioning for you, Brian. Can you?
Yeah.
And he said, I couldn't sing, I couldn't whatever, whatever. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I guess one of the many hats I wear on my baldy head is I'm the convener of Outblack, which is Australia's longest running GLBTIQ and sister girls group for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. We're based here in Melbourne, and we service, I guess, Victorian people who don't identify as straight. And each NAIDOC week we put on a gig that it happens in July. And I had assembled a crew of people to kind of, you know, drag queens and performers and whatnot. And being like a stickler for, you know, a running order and all that kind of stuff and just for timing and everything, that's why I'm in radio. I kind of, yeah, one of the drag queens not dropped out and so it just stuffed up my formula basically. And I said, I went to Kamahi, one of my bestest friends, and pleaded with him to say, can you please, you know, put on a dress and perform for me and fill this slot basically. And he's like, well, I've never done drag before. And I'm sure, and I said, you'll be fine, you'll be fine. And so he put on a dress and he worked on, you know, some stuff. And when he walked off stage, it was quite funny because he said, how was that? And I was like, yeah, that was great. But, and, you know, being such a good friend, I was able to be honest with him and say, look, but, you know, brother man or sister girl, hey, I don't know which what I said. But, yeah, don't, yeah, maybe use your own voice because you can't mime for shit, basically. Like, you're the worst drag queen in that sense. So, yeah, that's that yarn. He refers to it in this next segment, doesn't he?
How was that, if I can ask?
Oh, the God, that was probably when I first started Out Black, or like, oh, not started, rather, but took over Out Black about 6-7 years ago.
Wow.
And, yeah, Kamahi's been a good friend of mine. I remember, yeah, like, he's always bent gender with me, just to tell you a little yarn about him, because when I first met him, he was this guy, this tall black guy with long hair, and he always had this dog, Tana, who incidentally became my goddaughter. So I'm the, you know, this dog's godfather. But, I'd always see him around at different things and say hi to him. And because he's got such a weird name, Kamahi, I could never get my name head around the name, but I'd always refer to him, you know, that transgender guy with the dog. And that's who he was. And then people would say, who are you talking about? Like, Kamahi. I'm like, yeah, that fella, Kamahi. But I thought he was like transgender, or he'd always, you know, kind of say stuff that led me to believe that he was transitioning. And I don't know why or how I read that, but there's a feminine edge to him,
definitely.
But he's also highly masculine too at the same time. And so, yeah, he was just one of those guys that, yeah, was a bit of a mystery initially, and then we ended up becoming bestest mates, and, you know, we've had our ups and downs and whatnot, but he is, you know, when he's in town, it's nice to catch up with him, and, yeah, he's a really, really good, really good friend.
And when he's not in town, he runs off or flies off to have a fantastic time up there in the Northern Territory. And, of course, you know, that's a really high contrast life. He's one of those guys who just has feet in all these different worlds and finds belonging places in different places. But, yeah, when he's not with us in the city, he's up there hanging out with his dog.
All the things that I do. And what I've done, like, I live here in Melbourne, but because I have so many tours on this year, I've based myself in Darwin so I can be flown in and out of there. So every time I have a break from work, I'm with family. And that, to me, is the only way to reset for the next show, because they're quite big shows. I have prolific roles in two of them, and I have to, you know, have my head space clear for the work. So going home is the best way to do it. And, you know, like I have a dog. Her name is Tana. She's like my daughter. I delivered her because I used to own her mum. And she's just been with me her whole life. So she's grown up almost human. She has a personality. And I just, that's what I live for, that little dog. You know, like, that's my life. That she's my key. You know, unless somebody wants to give me one. But, yeah, so the only way I can handle all that is to go home and just relax with family. Yeah.
Tell us about the Shadow King. You're in town here in Melbourne to rehearse the Shadow King. You've presented the production as part of the Melbourne Festival, and you're off to Sydney and Perth, I understand. But just for our listeners, I guess, tell us what's the story, what's the thread, and what have you done with it? Because
Well, the Shadow King is it's a black version of King Lear by William Shakespeare. And what we've done is we've set it as the same families, like two families. We haven't changed any of the names, so all of us still have the names from the Lear text. And it's set up in Katherine, Northern Territory, just out of there. And it's a mining company money that's made Lear rich. And he's dividing it up between the three girls. So it's basically got the same storyline as King Lear. And I play the fool in that. So I'm King Lear's little sidekick who sort of sees through the three girls, sees through what they're planning to do, how they really are. It shows. So we follow Lear to a T. And the thing that I love about this is that it contains three different languages. Like, we have, we use English, we have Creole, and we have Yolngu-Mapa. That incorporates most of the Northern Territory. And a lot of us are from there. Like, Tommy Lewis is, you know, Chant of Jimmy Blacksmith, Red Hill. He's the lead in it. He plays Lear. So he and I are on stage all the time. And it's so funny because we both happen to live in Katherine. So we have been just hanging out and getting to know each other, you know, and it's been really good, really good. Like, I have a lot of love for that man.
How has it been interpreted, Blackley, if I can put such a question? I mean, King Lear being your quintessential white king with the three white daughters, blah, 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 blah. So how has that sort of been reinterpreted?
Well, one of Cordelia's lines at the start is like, "Dad, I don't know how to express my feelings into word, especially in front of all these people." And with our one, Cordelia goes, "I'm not lucky, me, I'm not sabi put about feeling into word, not in front of all about this mob people." So it's like Creole.
That's gorgeous.
And then,
wow.
Then you've got Frances Jubilee, I think, from Ten Canoes. She is in there and she speaks Yorongamata only, and she plays Gloucester. So these two are the elders, I guess, and then they're betrayed by their own kids. And what we're showing in this too, this is one of the scariest things for people, I guess, is that usually with black plays, we talk about the relationship between black and white or the effects of white and white settlement, I guess. Whereas in this one, it's totally black and the villains are black, the good guys are black, and it shows lateral violence quite a lot. And it's rife in our community, you know, as a result of what's happened, like white people coming in and, you know, creating all this. You know, that's the thing too. People think, oh, black fellas are like this, this and this, but everything we do is a direct result from the impact of white people coming here.
Yeah.
And, you know, not being allowed to be on our lands, like the intervention taking it off us. It's like, hang on, you know, what gives you the right to do that? And why shouldn't we be walking around here proud and rich and whatever like we're doing in this play? Because it is our land. Mm-hmm. Where's the retribution in that? You know, like nothing.
Hello there, funny lady Judith Lucy, and of course you're listening to Joy 94.9. Well, you'd be just plain f***ed in the head if you listened to anything else.
You're with Joy 94.9, right. June 94.9. What am I trying to say here? And that track just before we went to those community service announcements was Jessica Malboy, a lady from Darwin, Aboriginal girl, and that was her track Pop a Bottle, Fill Me Up. No shame, that one, eh? But we're chatting on, well, actually, we're not chatting live. We're actually doing a pre-record session of Lefty Pinkos this week with a fascinating man also from up the north of Australia, Kamahi Jordan King. And, yeah, tell us a bit about Kamahi, Kav.
Well, I think it was either you or somebody who took me along to Constantina Bush performance. It was actually at Albert Park at Gasworks and part of this,
yes,
like, bigger thing.
Yeah.
And I had never seen – I mean, I'm an innocent Sydney, Northern New South Wales person. I'd never seen black drag queen Australian style. And yeah. I hesitate to use that word now because, as we've just heard, Kamahi doesn't regard Constantina as a drag queen person at all. But I just was blown over. And it was an early show. It was Constantina Bush and the Bushettes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that sort of early show, maybe 4 years ago.
Yeah, I think that was one of her first major shows that she did. It was a little bit rough around the edges, but
that was what made it.
But yeah,
too.
That's the thing. It was like, you know, well, you use that term mild, which was like kind of a bit rough, a bit ready, a bit mild, or kind of not quite there, a stubby short of a six pack.
Yeah, that's
the kind of, like, you know, the Rulus in the top paddock, perhaps.
And I love the way in that particular show, Constantina had her costume changes on just off stage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was like really getting, and I think her. She had mum voices coming in off stage.
Yep. And and she also, you know, reenacted her conversation here with her grandfather and played a few characters in the mix of things. But also, yeah, this, you know, this tall black gin wearing a dress on stage, so as Constantina Bush, so, but not a drag queen, but yeah, a character. But what's this last segment we've got? Two Cap with Constantina.
Well, you know, look, we were quite surprised towards the end because, you know, we are getting towards the end of our conversation with Kamahi. And I remember just flinging a question at Kamahi, like, you know, where do you want your career to go? Because he's so skilled and he's, you know, constantly selling his art, the whole bit. So, you know, over the next 10 years. And basically he came up with a surprise location about where he wants to head that we weren't expecting.
I went over to London for, like, a play I wrote. I stayed there. For me, it was all about being free and freedom. London is so multicultural. Nobody looks at you in a bad way. They look at you, if anything, quite curious as to who are you and where are you from. And for me, being a black fella, growing up all the time, any person that's, like, non-Indigenous or Aboriginal looks at me, it's in a bad way. And over there, I felt totally free, so free, in fact, that without realizing it, I had walls around me and they just diminished in London, in the place that came here, you know, the mother country that come here and invaded us. I felt more at home than I do in my own country. As soon as I got back on the plane to Australia and set foot into customs, I could literally feel these walls going tuk, 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 just because I was getting looked at by the customs mob, by people that I was like, where's that black fella just coming back from? I didn't know they travel overseas. Kind of caper. Like, it was really there. And like, our country is so racist that if I want to settle it down somewhere, I reckon it'd be there. And they can fly my body back to Catherine and get buried. I don't care. I'll probably live in England. That's where I want to go. So that's where I see my career going, getting paid in pounds and losing them, hopefully. Yeah.
Kamahi, Jordan King speaking to us from the Blackman Hotel earlier this week. And today he lands in Sydney to begin the Festival of Sydney performance of The Shadow King. Yes, Go and see it.
If you're listening from Sydney and you want to check out an amazing adaptation of Shakespeare, check it out. Because, I mean, like, I've been a black fellow myself. I've seen a lot of different black theatre companies do Shakespeare, and I always kind of walk away with this bad taste in my mouth thinking, oh, you know, that's just black fella, you know, trying to do the white thing kind of thing. And it's almost got this assimilationist vibe that I feel about it. Whereas The Shadow King, I take my hat off to them because they really have done an amazing production that has taken, you know, this oldie-worldy English Shakespearean language and play and story and blackened it up in an amazing way that kind of also, I guess, attributes the process of mining and the taking over a country in this country, of our country, and basically kind of saying, well, you know, this is what you've given us, this is what you expect us to be, and this is the tragic outcome that'll happen when it comes to, you know, basically the two worlds colliding, and it's not part of our culture as Aboriginal people, but if you want us to go down that way, this is what might happen, and, you know, using Shakespeare and his greatest tragedy as the vehicle to tell that story. So do see it. And if you're basically, or if you're in Perth, maybe, they're going to be presenting it at the Perth International Arts Festival after their Sydney season. So Melbourne's had our turn. Sydney, you're next. Perth, you're after that. And hopefully, we chatted to Kamahi also about kind of potential to take it overseas, and which is where that soundbite about London came from. But they do hope to present it back to the Brits in the future, just to kind of, you know, take the words back there, because it has that resonance. It's not just blackfella doing, you know, Shakespeare. It's actually, there's something really powerful about this production. And like, it blew my mind. I saw it twice, and the second time actually, both times it brought me to tears. And yeah, Kath, I spoke to you after the first time, and I was distraught.
Brian was very messy.
Yeah.
He was sort of like, I don't know what to say. One thing I think that's really exciting about this run, as Kamahi said, is that there's representatives there from British Council of the Arts, and, you know, why will they fly all the way to Sydney to see something unless this show is going to go all the way to the UK? So Kamahi might get a little taste of his dream come true before it actually comes true, if you know what I mean.
But we'll be back after this track with a chat about next week's Lefty Pinkos.
Mm-hmm.
Uplifting, informing, empowering. Joy 94.9.
This is about, we're going to come to a close with Lefty Pinkos this week. And,
but we've got a very special guest next week.
We do. It's a bit of a coup, actually, I must say, because I'm pretty excited about this particular guest. I've heard her on radio and on television. She's been on Q&A. She's done some amazing things all over the country. Deborah Cheatham, she's a Yorta Yorta woman, my mob, actually.
Mm.
She's an opera singer who was removed as a child and was given an interesting story about that removal. But, yeah, she's gone on to become an opera singer and has presented and produced, rather, Australia's first Aboriginal opera with a predominantly Aboriginal cast. So she'll be joining us next week on Lefty Pinkos. And also, just to keep in with the gay and lesbian theme of our station, she's a lesbian also. So it's kind of, she ticks all these wonderful boxes. And I've wanted to get her in. It's like been this dream to have her in the studios to just have a chat to her, because she's, whenever I've seen her or heard her talk on air or on television, she's just got this amazing generosity around her experience, and they're quite harrowing, awful experiences. But I don't know where she kind of, you know, she's very generous, I guess, in that sense. But I guess ultimately it's about education and understanding and healing for herself too. So we'll have Deborah Cheatham in next week on Lefty Pinkos.
Really looking forward to that.
Yeah, it'll be nice too, because it's Invasion Day this Monday.
Yeah, on Monday.
January 26th. Yeah. So it's kind of, I quite like, we didn't sort of, I don't think we planned it, but we've bookended Invasion Day or Australia Day,
some people with it. Black people.
But there's Aboriginal people doing wonderful things. We've been a bit mindful too that we've had lots of blokes in talking on Lifty Pinko, so we want to mix it up with some women. And Deborah will be our first female guest
for the year.
So, yeah, it'll be nice to have her in here. But do tune in. Stick around because we've got Tahal in a handbasket, a basket rather.
That's right.
With
Dolly.
Dolly Diamond up next from 9pm. But before we go out, we're going to play a track that Kath loves.
Yeah, I keep listening to it.
She does, and she put it in the notes for me to play earlier, but I just picked the wrong track as I'm prone to doing. So, Kath, this one goes out to you. It's Amy Winehouse with Valerie.
The most diverse sound for the most diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.